You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. This is episode number 78, Reasons Why Statisticians Fail to Lead. Welcome to this webinar organized by The Effective Statistician. I'm Alexander Schacht, as you can see from the screen, and I'm here presenting together with Gary Sullivan. And we are talking about four reasons why statisticians fail to lead and how to overcome them, because the time for statistical leadership is now. Okay, what will we speak about today? We will first speak about what we mean by leadership, because it's not just kind of the administrative leadership that lots of people think about, because this webinar is both for statisticians with and without supervisor responsibilities. We'll also give a little bit of an introduction of Gary and myself, and then we go into the core topic about why don't statisticians lead and how you can address these problems. Finally, we will also show you some further solutions that you can go into to accelerate your leadership development. And then we finish with a Q&A.
Okay, so welcome everyone. I'm Gary Sullivan. Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. So I always like to start any type of seminar or training with a definition of leadership. I think it's really important, because if you don't sort of define what it is you're aspiring to be or do, I think you can get lost. So this is a definition that we first developed at Eli Lilly and Company when I was there, and I've kind of tweaked it over the years. And it reads as, the definition of leadership is the ability to consistently deliver value to an organization or cause by inspiring others to take a specific direction or action when they truly have the freedom or choice to do otherwise. I would ask you to sort of think about this definition, whether you find it appropriate for you, or think about what other definition might be appropriate. But I would guess that it's probably pretty close to what this is. So this is kind of what we're striving to do. This is what I strive to do in any training that I provide, and this is what we'll be striving to do in the leadership course that we'll be presenting over the next few months. So just a quick introduction, I'll let Alexander introduce himself.
So I'm a statistician by training. I got my PhD in 2002 from the University of Göttingen and joined the pharma industry directly thereafter. First at Boehringer Ingelheim, then at Lilly, and now I'm just moving into my next role at UCB. And I've worked in the late phases for most of this time in neuroscience, in virology, and also in immunology. And in terms of the most of the time where I worked in the medical affairs and the HDA area. And interactions with key opinion leaders is very, very important there. And one of the things why I'm so passionate about these leadership topics is I've seen that these leadership skills really helped me to progress in my career and get things done and have a bigger impact at work. And also actually bigger job satisfaction for myself. One of the challenges, for example, I faced from a leadership perspective was that I really wanted to directly interact with key opinion leaders at advisory boards and these kind of settings where we in the pharma industry work together with external physicians. And at the time I started at Lilly, statisticians were rarely invited to these advisory boards, and especially in the affiliate where I was working, nearly nobody from the stats team was invited, or really on a very, very occasional thing. However, lots of the input into the strategic discussions, into the design aspects, happened at these advisory boards. And for me, it was really important to get in there to actually have an impact and make strategic discussions and also help our customers there better understand the science. So I applied various leadership techniques to actually accomplish that, build relationships with those that have a say in that, contributed, spoke up, and really added value to these advisory boards. So I got more and more included up to the point where I actually was a co-chair of the advisory boards. So that's just an example of leadership behavior that we want to talk today about, and which is also why I'm so interested in it. I see lots of statisticians that have are very, very good on the technical basis, but still fail to have an impact at work because they can't combine it with these leadership skills. And that's why I'm so passionate about it. And that's why we are here today and have this webinar.
All right, great, Alexander, thank you. So again, my name is Gary Sullivan. I got my PhD in statistics from Iowa State University way back in 1989. From there, I joined Eli Lilly and Company. I was there for just over 28 years. My time there was kind of split in half. The first half of my career was focused on being a technical statistician or a project statistician, as we like to say. All on the non-clinical side of the business, so in research, product development, and manufacturing. About halfway through my career, I moved over to the management side. I took on some different management roles of statisticians on the non-clinical side. My last role at Lilly for the last 7 years I was there, I had responsibility for all the non-clinical statisticians as the senior director for all non-clinical statisticians at Lilly. So part of my leadership story is back in 2009 when we embarked on a new strategy within our statistical sciences group. Part of one of the key pillars of our strategy was to develop a leadership program, and I was charged with doing that with another individual put that program together. So we have had our own program within the statistics function. We had 300-400 statisticians, and we developed the leadership program for those statisticians because we decided it was critical to our strategy, that without improving the leadership skills of our statisticians, we couldn't have the impact that we felt that statisticians could have within the company. I can sort of share stories of how that impact was realized, how I think we've generated tremendous value for Eli Lilly and Company. And if you talk to other statisticians that were part of that team, I think they'll say the same thing. From there, I got involved with the American Statistical Association. Bob Rodriguez, who was the president of the ASA back in 2012, I got connected with him. He put me on a task force, and that ended up with me helping are actually driving the development of the first ever leadership course that was taught at the Joint Statistical Meetings, and it's been taught there since 2014. Lisa Lavange, the president, this past year has wanted to expand that initiative and develop a leadership institute, and she's in the process of doing that. As a part of that, I've developed a couple additional courses for the ASA that we've taught. We're in the process of teaching one now. And in addition to that, I'm an adjunct professor at Purdue University, and I'm teaching a one-credit leadership seminar up there as we speak. So I'm very passionate about leadership. I retired from Lilly at the end of 2017 and started my own company, which is focused on leadership development and leadership training. And one of the things that we'll talk about is I think the lost impact that statisticians could have by not leading. So a quick story from my side, back about 10 years ago, when I had responsibility for the non-clinical side, I used to connect with various people on the research side just to understand some of their challenges and understand how the statisticians were supporting them and whether they were providing them the right collaborative and leadership support. And I developed a good relationship with a senior chemist, and he had shared with me one of his challenges was he was frustrated with some of the bioavailability data that was being generated from the ADME group. He didn't understand the variability in the data. He didn't believe the assay was in control, and he wasn't sure how they basically made decisions off the data. They would where the cutoffs were, and they weren't taking into account variability as to whether a compound was viable. And so he pointed me in the direction of someone from the ADME group who he had kind of an adversarial relationship with. He had talked to this person, but they just didn't really get along. So he was kind of stuck. So I reached out to this individual and started talking to him about, you know, the assay and the bioavailability assay and other assays. And I was able to build trust with that individual too and sort of build a bridge between the two. And I convinced the ADME scientist, who was another senior technical person within his group, to have a person from my group come over and help them assess and kind of quantify their assay and the variability in the assay. And long story short, I mean, it ended up being a wonderful collaboration. The statistician from my group worked with a number of people within the ADME group to characterize many of the assays. The ADME people were really pleased because they felt like they had a better handle on their assays. The chemistry folks were much more pleased because the ADME folks were able to answer their questions about variability. And it was a win-win for everyone. And I share this as an example of this was not anything that was put on my desk as something, a problem I needed to solve. And I think that's the impact that statisticians can have, and frankly, that we're losing out on a lot of times, is we're not the opportunities that maybe are the most impactful and value-adding are not opportunities that are presented to us. We have to go out and find them. And that requires, I think, leadership skills in terms of building relationships, networking, understanding the business, developing trust with collaborators, and then frankly seeing opportunities and then driving change. So I think that's truly leadership. And like I said, the benefits that I've seen in my career over the years from leadership, and even the benefits of people around me, I think are sometimes pretty astonishing. And I think statisticians don't realize the impact that they can have from developing stronger leadership skills. So that's something, that's one reason, like I said, that I'm very passionate about it. And I really feel like statisticians do collectively need to step up and learn how to lead and go do it. So let's dive into the four big reasons, at least the four big reasons from our perspective. You'll see some overlap in these reasons. You might think of other ones, but I think these kind of cover most anything anyone can think of in terms of why statisticians don't lead. The first reason that we've listed here is mindset. As you all know, statisticians are from pretty much early in their graduate training, they're lead to, or they're trained to support and not really lead. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, being in the service in order to help others is a great endeavor. The way that we're trained, and I don't mean technically, but from a mindset standpoint, is we are very sort of logical, concrete thinkers that think in terms of facts. I'm seeing this right in front of my eyes as I teach this seminar up at Purdue University. A lot of smart statisticians, I have about 20 graduate students in my class, and it's been a challenge for them to sort of think differently, that I'm not asking them to think about how to develop a specific method or whether a technical approach is right or wrong. Leadership is a very abstract science in a way, and there's no one way to lead, and there's no textbook on how to lead. The different challenges that leaders face, you can't write them all down in an encyclopedia of textbooks. So it's hard for them to think that way. I can see that I'm trying to sort of break them out of a mold that they've been thinking, and because they're getting sort of very technical trained, they're trained to go into a room, sit and listen to lectures and take notes and ask questions just to clarify things, but they don't think about, they're not able to, I think, judge ambiguous situations as well. We're not trained to do that. I think we have good foundational skills to do that, but we're trained to consult, teach, research. And I fell into this too. When I first hired into Lilly, I became very busy. I had lots of clients, lots of projects. I found success. I felt like I was helping them. You fall into routine and, you know, it's kind of like, why change? So we don't see leadership as our responsibility necessarily. We really don't see it as anyone's responsibility. Someone kind of steps up and always does it. But most statisticians never think about it. And as I said in my introduction, I think there's a real impact loss here. I can't sort of stress that enough, that I think statisticians have so much to offer beyond their technical skills. I think we're very, very insightful and adept thinkers. And I think the sky's the limit as far as statisticians can go. We just need to realize that. The second reason, and it's kind of related to the first, is a bias toward technical skills. Now, there's no debate that our strength and foundation are our technical skills. That's what we're trained to do initially. That's why we're hired. That's why a lot of people are hired, for their technical skills. But I think we fall into a trap of the more expertise, the better. And it's hard to kind of break out of that. We fall into, again, this kind of comfort zone of just wanting more and more technical training. And I think it's either too, we realize it too late or never realize it, that we need to add to our non-technical skills. And some people call them soft skills. I would just call them leadership skills, because that's what they are. Again, I saw an example of this last year. A colleague I had worked with within the ASA had proposed and had accepted offering a leadership course. Just a one-day leadership course at a large statistical technical conference. This technical conference was attended by over 1,000 statisticians. The course was sort of put out there along with a lot of the technical courses that were offered, and we couldn't get 12 statisticians. We couldn't even get 10 statisticians to sign up for this course, and we had to cancel it. And I really think that's a problem with statisticians, that we focus on these technical skills and we feel like that's our bread and butter, and the more the better, until the technical arguments aren't enough. We may go in thinking, hey, this method is better than this method, but there's other factors that leaders and decision makers take into consideration, or that we as statisticians have to take into consideration, and we're not able to influence them or convince them accordingly. We may start to see opportunities, but we're not skilled at driving change. I really think that statisticians should focus on technical skills initially in their careers. But as they get into a professional workplace, we need to change the ratio, because I think it's closer to, you know, 95 technical and 5% soft or leadership skills, or maybe even worse than that in some sense. And there needs to be a balance. As you get further in your career, you need to hone more of your soft skills or your leadership skills. And focus less on the technical skills. And again, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that we should ever abandon our technical ability, because I think even people in leadership, administrative leadership positions, need to have that technical skill. But the more leadership skills, the better. And we're really sort of biased away from that right now. The third reason is just a lack of leadership understanding. You might even just say sort of the basics of leadership. So just to, again, give another example from early in my career, this was a couple years into my career at Lilly, and I was working with a formulator in the tablet development area at Lilly. And he had noticed that the way that we sort of selected equipment was kind of haphazard and was sometimes sort of disruptive, in that some certain pieces of equipment wouldn't really jive with other pieces, or two areas that might use the same equipment would buy different pieces of equipment. And he really wanted to do something about this. And so I was working with him to develop sort of an approach that was somewhat based in data and quantitative in terms of assessing some of the capabilities of the different equipment and maybe bringing a more quantitative and logical approach toward purchasing equipment and implementing it. And we ran this by one of the leaders over there who was an executive director in the area. And at one point, after several meetings, I mean, he became convinced and he just kind of said, okay, I'm convinced, show me the way. In a sense, he was saying, okay, go lead this. And I was a little bit paralyzed, to be honest with you. I really didn't know the next steps to take. I really didn't understand that I would have needed to network the idea with leaders within the area that was going to be impacted, to influence people or to really know how to sort of drive that change. So I think it's just sort of a basic understanding of leadership, and some of the basic leadership skills and fundamentals would have been really helpful to me at that time. So I've sort of come to the conclusion that it's never too early to invest in your leadership skills. I think, again, I don't know if graduate school is too early. I think I'm going to at least create a little bit of a mindset change for some of the folks I'm teaching now. But hopefully within the first few years of their professional career, they'll start to see that some of the concepts that I was sharing with them, they really need to invest in and hone those skills. The fourth reason is a lack of big picture thinking. Again, statistical consulting provides lots of tactical challenges. We have lots of opportunities to optimize and develop new methods. When we get a data set, there are lots of different ways that we can analyze the data set, but sometimes we can sort of get in too deep here, that our focus becomes the tactical aspects of the project and not the strategic aspects. So it kind of gets back to our training. Our focus is on the immediate customer, the immediate problem. We don't think bigger picture. We don't think what's the question that my analysis is trying to answer or the question beyond that question. So again, another quick example, again, earlier in my career, and this is back in the early to mid 90s, I had this idea that we could leverage statistical experimental design to really demonstrate robustness in our processes. This is when I was working in the bioproduct development area. And so this was, you know, about 7 or 8 years ahead of the FDA's 21st Century Initiative and the Quality by Design Initiative that really impacted the CM&C development and manufacturing side of the business. That was sort of the basis of their thinking. And this was well before that. And I took it to my senior director at the time, who was a non-statistician. And again, I mean, he didn't think it was a bad idea. But I thought it was more his job to lead it than my job. And it kind of goes back to the previous reason around leadership basics is I really didn't know that I needed to take this idea. I needed to network it. I needed to reach out to manufacturing and find out how it would impact them, get some people on board, form maybe a task force, look for management support, but actually I needed to drive it. And I didn't really have that big picture mindset. I didn't really realize how impactful, you know, something like that would be and how far reaching it would be and how important it would have been. So it really didn't go anywhere. And then 7, 8 years later, when the FDA initiative came out, I just sort of looked at myself like, you know, I was thinking that way and I just didn't know what to do with that opportunity or that idea. So again, it's something where I think if we invest in our statisticians, invest in ourselves to develop these leadership skills early on, and even later on, I don't think there's a bad time to do it. It will pay tremendous dividends and deliver, I think, value to our organizations that that maybe we couldn't really imagine. I've seen that at Eli Lilly. The question comes, okay, well, how do we address these issues? And this was part of the seminar. What should we do about them? And I'll go over some high-level things here and then maybe give you some specific ideas on the next slide. But, I mean, first and foremost, the first obvious answer is to invest in leadership development. And I'll say early in your career, but I don't think it's ever too late. I saw people that, 10, 15 or more years into their career sort of hit a wall. And once you sort of expose them to the ideas of leadership and some of the key concepts, they see what's been sort of hindering them to take that next step. And once they sort of latch on and invest, their impact can exceed what they've done in previous years in their career. I talk a lot about becoming a student of leadership. I have the idea, I write a blog for my website, and one of the things I'm going to write about is the notion that how leaders need to invest in leadership development. I think people have this misconception that once they become or put in a leadership role, whether it's a senior technical role or a supervisory role, that that's an indication that, okay, I've got it figured out. And having studied leadership for over 10 years now and studied a lot of leaders, more people don't have it figured out than do. I can tell you that for sure. So I think even people that consider themselves to be good leaders need to continuously be students of leadership. And I've seen the best leaders are the ones that do this, that they are just passionate about learning and picking up any new leadership idea or concept or learning from any experience. The third thing is to take on challenging roles and opportunities. I think, again, this gets to statisticians kind of stepping out of their comfort zone. At some point, when people kind of break free of the, okay, I'm not just here to provide technical support, they kind of see that, yeah, they make themselves a little bit vulnerable there, but the learning and the development is just tremendous. And I think they find as well, and this is what I found as well, is that I can go toe-to-toe with people from other disciplines with regard to thinking strategically, thinking about new ideas, innovating and implementing different ideas to improve any part of a business. So I don't think we should take a backseat to anyone there. So what are some specific things that people can do? One thing is to just sign up for non-technical training. And again, I'll call this leadership training. There's a couple examples there, but just again, another example from early in my career, I took a technical communications class within the first couple years I was at Eli Lilly and Company. And to this day, the skills that I learned from that class, I mean, they're basically leadership communication skills. And I use them throughout my career, and I use them and I teach them today. So just even honing one skill that's a leadership skill, whether it's how to be a more effective communicator or how to build trust with employees, there I think are training courses out there that people can invest in. And as I said, I think we need to change the ratio of the amount of technical training people invest in to non-technical or leadership training. If you think about for yourself or even for your colleagues, how much time you invest in going to technical seminars, going to technical conferences, I think you'll start to see that, yeah, maybe I can afford to mix in, you know, a leadership seminar or a communications class or a negotiations class, you know, once every year. The second idea I would offer is to read the biography of an exceptional leader. This is something I had my students do up at Purdue. I had them write a profile of a leader, any leader that they saw, that they observed. And some of them wrote about, you know, leaders in society, leaders in politics, leaders in business. Some of them wrote about leaders around them, classmates, professors, coaches, those types of things. But there are lots of biographies of exceptional leaders out there. And you can learn a lot simply by reading their stories. You can sort of challenge yourself when you sort of see them talk through situations or experiences and say, do I handle experiences that way that are similar, or are there things that I could learn from them? Or sometimes it might just affirm your approach towards certain situations. So I think it's a great way to learn. I've read several different biographies of leaders. For anyone familiar over in the States, Bob Gates, who was the Secretary of Defense under Presidents Bush and Obama, wrote a book called Duty about, when was it, maybe 6-7 years ago. And it was a long book, but Mr. Gates is just an exceptional leader. And his book was almost, again, just example after example of challenges and leadership situations and how he handled them. So the third thing would be, as I mentioned previously, to take on a role outside your comfort zone. So again, I think throughout my career, both as a technical statistician and as someone in a management position, that there are always projects and initiatives that are coming up that aren't necessarily technical initiatives. It might be we need to implement this in this area, or we need to change the culture over here, or we need a group to think about how we're going to implement this idea that may just be nothing to do with your technical work. And I finally learned that when those opportunities would come up, that I would volunteer for them. You get to work with people from different disciplines. You feel a little bit vulnerable because you don't consider yourself an expert, but you actually start to find that you can think creatively and strategically with any of these other folks that you're working with, and you learn from them and they learn from you. So again, I think those are the types of things. So it doesn't have to be a role as a non-statistician, but it could be you're still a statistician, but you're just helping with this team or this initiative to bring your own thinking and ideas. And then the last thing would be to find an experienced leadership coach. I think great leaders know how to develop other leaders. And it's something that, especially as they get later in their career, they enjoy doing. So I think if you look at someone that you see as a really effective leader, just approaching them and saying, hey, can you coach me? Can we spend an hour together once a month? Can I just talk through situations and how I'm approaching them? Or can you share your own experiences? Again, these are great ways to learn. And they're things that I think a lot of people can do tomorrow, if not in the next week or two. So those are, I think, some specific ideas. I think first and foremost, as Alexander will talk about our training, that signing up for leadership training is a good way to go, and it helps you become more a student of leadership. So on that topic, you may think, well, there's different types of training. Our training is a little bit unique, and Alexander will go into that in a few minutes. But you might think about, yeah, I see these kind of one-day trainings or these 1-week trainings. So how about those? And I think there are pros and cons. Now, again, I'll say two things. One is I teach some of these type training courses. So I do think they're valuable. I'll talk about the benefits. I'm actually a product of one-time training. It was a 4-day course that I took that really lit a fire under me. So I think that's the first benefit of a one-time training course. They can really light a leadership fire for you. You can see the value and the difference that strong leadership makes in an organization. And that in itself can be very motivating. These one-time courses can provide basic understanding. Even within a day, you'll get at least a good understanding of what leadership is and what it's all about. And you can get some depth in a couple areas. I know in the trainings we do at the joint statistical meetings, we focus specifically on influence and business acumen. And I think we give some people some depth there. but there's just so much more to cover. So many different competencies and concepts that you don't have the time. It's a brief, intense commitment, and so you really need to be personally motivated to take that experience and then do something with it. The cons are there's little or no action planning. We try to do this in the JSM course that I teach, at least give people a couple, have them write down and try to commit to a couple of things, but most of the time it's just continuing their study. That's the biggest thing, is try to create this habit of leadership study. As I said, you can have some depth in a couple areas, but the breadth is limited. There's no feedback loop. We try to do some exercises in these courses, but again, they're very quick, and so there's not really a chance to go out and practice and gain experience applying these things in the workplace, and then coming back and saying, "Hey, this worked," or "Here's how it went," or "This went well." Then I sort of hit this other roadblock or this other challenge. And like I said, it's 1 day, 2 days, 4 days. It's difficult to sustain momentum because everyone knows you go to a training class, you come back, and then work happens. The rest of the company didn't stop functioning. You're slammed with more projects, and you know, sometimes within a week you can forget that you were even at that course. So those are the challenges there. Like I said, I teach these courses, and I kind of make this clear when I teach them that to tell people that it's really up to you. And there are some little things that you can try to do to create some momentum, but it can be difficult.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is an episode that is a replay of a webinar that Gary and myself did early 2019. And you'll hear Gary talking to slides, but of course you don't see the slides. But I think you can get all of the content also just by listening to it. We are talking about a couple of reasons why we believe that statisticians are failing to lead in terms of not as supervisors, but leading in terms of influencing others. And we'll also talk about a couple of things you can do to actually overcome these leadership failures. However, the best things that you can do, and that's just from Gary and myself, is to enroll in our leadership program. It's a really, really nice program and set up in a way that Gary and myself would have liked to have it for ourselves when we were younger in our career, and what we would have liked to learn early in our career to be much more successful. So we took a long time during our career to gather all these things together, boil it down to the most important parts, and then present it back to you so that you can become students of leadership through this leadership program. Gary and myself are very, very passionate about it because we think that leadership is, or failure of leadership, is the main reason why we as statisticians are not having the impact we could have in the work. And therefore, we are not serving patients well enough, and we are not reaching our potential. Of course, this whole podcast is about this, but this leadership program is designed as a program that can help you implement all the learnings in your day-to-day activities. So, currently, the card is open for enrolling into this leadership program, and you can find all the details that you need at theeffectivestatistician.com/course. So just check out this and say you have all the details that you need to make an informed decision. This podcast is created in association with PSI, a global member organization dedicated to leading and promoting best practices and industry initiatives. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video-on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Visit the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today.